Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast, the podcast that is dedicated towards building the bridge between the police and the communities that they serve. Thank you so much in anticipation of you liking, subscribing, and sharing to this podcast. If it's your first time coming here, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope that you will continue to tune in, catch up on the past episodes, and like, subscribe, and share so that you can get notifications about future episodes. Remember that you can help to support this podcast. It does cost me a little bit to publish these episodes. So the podcast can be supported through PayPal, Cash App, and Venmo, or you can go on over to the Patreon page, Captain Hunter's Podcast on Patreon. Go over there and support for $1 an episode or $5 a month or whatever you can do would be greatly appreciated in order to help support the podcast going forward. We're going to jump right into it. We're going to talk about monthly wrap up. Yes, it's the month of March. Talk about the major stories that occurred from the month of February. So if you listen to my episodes with Miss Liana Perez, we talked about civilian oversight boards, and we're going to continue with that frame of mind. And we're going to look at the city of Phoenix. Now, the city of Phoenix has had some problems for going on for some time now. City of Phoenix has one of the largest, if not the largest, cases of or incidences of police officers in them killing their citizens. I know that's a harsh way of putting it, but it's an unfortunate truth. And so in response to this, and also if you remember from a few months ago, there was a situation in which the little girl had taken a doll from a dollar store. Someone calls the police on the family. The police respond, perform a motor vehicle stop, stop the family in a housing complex. And guns are drawn, lives are threatened, babies are ripped out of arms, and all this kind of crazy kind of nonsense. Police officers are repeatedly swearing. And so response to that particular incident and response to numerous other complaints that have been going on, the city of Phoenix has finally passed, their legislature, their governing body, has finally passed a resolution to approve a city oversight board. It was passed by a 5-4. The council approved the Office of Accountability and Transparency. It will become a new department, and they will have a community review board and a unit dedicated to monitoring and investigating police complaints. So it is obvious to me, and this is my own speculation, that the citizens out there do not have any type of faith in the internal affairs process, in the monitoring governing process of the city of Phoenix Police Department in themselves. So they're going to create their own civilian review board that will have their own governing and investigatory powers. Of course, the police union is against this. They are skeptical about the board's power and their political agenda. So that's what's going to be going on in the city of Phoenix. So we're going to keep an eye out on that. Keeping with the same theme, in Oakland, police department has just fired their civilian review board has just fired their chief, who was hired 3 years ago, Ann Kirkpatrick. So they fire her without cause. So apparently their civilian review board out there, who had very broad powers as well, very unhappy with their relationship between the police and the public. The review board out there said, we're going to fire her, and did not give her any cause. The mayor had to sign off on it. So apparently he did, or she did, firing approval from Mayor Libby Schaff, who hired the chief 3 years ago. Moments after the commission's vote, Schaff phoned the chief to inform her that she was out of a job. So this is the power that sometimes civilian review boards do have. Sometimes they get their way and they're just, you know, laying down the line and laying down the law. And so that is just the way that it is. We started on the West Coast. Let's work our way east here if we can. So let's stop off in the city of Chicago. The city of Chicago is, you know, I don't understand what their problems are concerning Jesse Smollett, however you say his last name. He was already indicted. He's been indicted again. They brought in a special prosecutor, Dan Webb, to prosecute this case and see if there's any funny business going on. You know, I don't know if this whole thing is about Kim Fox, the district attorney out there who the police department, Chicago Police Department, is having some problems with, or if this is about Jesse Smollett. But I can guarantee you having worked in law enforcement for 24 years in a city that is not even half the size of the city of Chicago, that people will come into the police department and lie every single day. I can't tell you how many times we've had to deal with people coming in telling us that their cars were stolen when in fact their husbands had it, or they had given it out for a crack rental or something along those lines. People lie every day. And in many cases, our prosecutors would neglect or refuse to prosecute people like that because they said they want people to come in and tell the truth, you know. And if you set up a culture where you're going to be arresting persons who are lying, then you're going to create a negative impact upon the community. So I don't know what's going on with this whole Jesse Smollett thing, whether it's about him, whether it's about the prosecutor out there, Kim Fox. But, you know, there's certainly something going on out there. Special Prosecutor Dan Webb, I'm reading from the APnews.com right now. Special Prosecutor Dan Webb said in a statement that Smollett faces six felony counts of disorderly conduct stemming from four separate false reports he gave to police. I have no doubt that Jesse Smollett went to the police department and lied. I have no doubt in my mind that he staged this incident in order to grab attention for himself or to bring attention to MAGA people. I don't know what his motivations were, but I have no doubt that he was not telling the truth. And his reasons for doing this, whatever they are reprehensible. He wasted the Chicago Police Department's time, energy, and resources. I think he probably should have compensated a little bit. The city of Chicago is suing him to get this money back for an overtime that they spent doing it, investigating his nonsense. I don't think that... I don't think that anything good and positive is going to come out of sending this guy to jail. It's ridiculous. Calling a special prosecutor, you got to pay for it. For what? Because this man lied? People lie every day. Absolutely, absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Write me back. Let me know what you think and why you think that Smollett is being persecuted. What's going on out there? And let me just give you another story and what Chicago Police Department out there should be focused on. And this is coming from the Chicago Sun-Times. So all that's going on out there in the city of Chicago. Chicago is in Cook County. That's the Cook County. That's Cook County is the name of the county. That's where the Kim Fox is the head prosecutor out there. So they have a $14 million settlement proposed in lawsuit over Cook County inmates masturbating in front of female public defenders. A $14 million legal settlement is being proposed by attorneys for Cook County public defenders and law clerks whose class action lawsuit claims that they were subjected to a hostile work environment in which inmates were masturbating in front of them. So the Cook County office out there, inmates, were masturbating in front of these female public defenders and clerks. The officials out there didn't act swift enough, didn't act fast enough, if they acted at all, in order to stop this nonsense. And now Cook County is going to have to pay $14 million. So all this craziness that's going on, the murders that are going on in Chicago, the gang violence, all this craziness that's going on, all this real stuff that's going on, $14 million is going to have to come out of the budget. And the city of Chicago Police Department and others want to prosecute Jesse Smollett. Prosecute him and probably, in my opinion, persecute Kim Fox. Absolutely ridiculous. Got it. We got to stop this kind of nonsense. Continuing on in the Midwest, we all know about the unfortunate situation going on in Milwaukee, where five persons were killed by a crazed, allegedly gunman who was having some kind of work difficulties and decided to take the gun to work and shoot fellow employees, kill them. Apparently, if you listen to his fellow coworkers, he was having some rough times. CBSNews.com said that he was accusing other persons. I believe he was an electrician. He was accusing other persons of going through his stuff, stealing his stuff. So whether he's having some real mental breakdowns, no one knows. But he takes his anger and frustration and possible mental disabilities or mental problems out on his coworkers. And now five people are sadly and tragically killed over this nonsense. We really have to do something about gun control, do something to get it under control, because we cannot continue to live in a society in which we are fearful to go to work, fearful to fire people, fearful of what goes on. It's really, really just a very sad and tragic case. I want to talk about school resource officers right now. please go back and listen to my interview with Ms. Johanna Hayes, the United States Congressman, Connecticut 5th District. Please go back and listen to that episode. She was very, she very much gave high praise to the school resource officer when she was a teacher at a local high school here in the city that I'm at and that she was at prior to her becoming a U.S. congressman. And so what I really want you to take away from that is the way that she discusses how the school resource officers are supposed to act. Now, I want to play for you the Orlando situation in which a school resource officer is apprehending and placing zip ties on a six-year-old child at a charter school. Now, I blame a lot of this on the charter school. They should know how to deal with children, know how to deal with difficult students. This is part of your job. And when you call the police, any time that any person, school, private citizen, public business, calls the police, you're calling for the use of force, and this is exactly what you're going to get. And now, let me just play this for you so we can listen to this. Listen to how this six-year-old child is sobbing and crying.
Okay, she's going to have to come with us now.
Okay, Kai, we have to go with them, baby girl.
Stand up. Okay, come over here.
Where are those forks?
It's for you.
Keep your hands, okay? Come over here, honey. It's not going to hurt.
No, I want handcuffs on. No, don't put handcuffs on. Help me.
Let's go.
Your grandma can come pick you up, okay?
Oh, I was there at school. I just saw you.
Right. Come on, let's go.
No, please let me go.
Okay, come on. You can tell me what happened on the
car, okay? I don't want to go to the police car.
You don't want to?
No, please.
You have to.
No, please give me a second chance.
No, please give me a second chance.
I don't want to do this. No. Please.
I hope that really touched your heart, touched your mind. And so that you can really get an understanding about what was going on at that situation. And to the officer and to any other officer, I would say, why not give this child a second chance? Why not turn around to this child and say, hey, listen, why should I give you another chance? Right? Try to reason with this child. I know she is six at the time, but try to reason with this child and try to declare why you feel that this is in her best interest or what we're going to do in order to come to a resolution. Why should I give you a second chance? And there's got to be some other type of resolution. There's got to be some type of other solution rather than arresting and placing these children into the school, the prison pipeline. And this is just another case of it going wrong. And in this particular case, it's my understanding that they fired this officer. I do not agree with him being fired. This is what you called for. This is what they trained for. So we have to change the training in this situation. Have more compassionate, empathetic school resource officers who are able to de-escalate situations, who understand the situation, who can call a parent, who can call a grandparent, who can talk to these kids and get through to them. We have to be able to do that. And so until we change the culture and the training of the police officers and bring more empathetic police officers into the schools, this is what we're going to get. This is what we're going to get. We have to balance the safety of the schools, i.e. school shooters, with the safety of the schools in their psyches for in not traumatizing these kids for life, right? What parent is going to look at a video like that, which you can watch on YouTube? That's where I got the video from YouTube. What parent is going to watch that and then feel safe enough to call the police when they need it? Absolutely ridiculous. So let me just read a little bit from this particular story. This is coming from New York Times. Kyla Roll, that's her name. She's six. She did not understand what the police officers were doing. This arrest took place back in September. The arrests already had prompted fierce criticism of the rough treatment of young children by law enforcement. The officer, Dennis Turner, who also arrested a six-year-old boy in a separate episode on the same day, was terminated from his job in September. So this is the same guy who arrested the other six-year-old. Jeez, But the distressing footage renews criticism this week, with some saying the arrest constituted child abuse. I don't know about all that. It was heartbreaking to watch the six-year-old girl pleading for help and asking for a second chance as she was being arrested, Randolph Bracey, a Florida state senator, said in a statement. The trauma this caused Kaya and her family is something nobody should ever have to go through. After Kaya's arrest, the Florida state representative Bracey introduced a bill last year that would bar officers from arresting on anyone under the age of 12. He said in a statement that it was shocking that no existing law prevented this unnecessary response to childhood misbehavior. Chief Orlando Rolon of the Orlando Police Department said in a statement that the arrest compromised trust between the community and police officers. He said he had taken steps to prevent similar arrests in the future, including requiring a deputy chief's approval before a child under the age of 12 is arrested. The Orlando Police Department, which I'm assuming is a very large police department, you got to go all the way up to the deputy chief. They got to make a call to a deputy chief to see if somebody's arrested. You can't trust a sergeant. For those who don't know the hierarchy of police departments, the next, it goes officer, then sergeant, then usually it's lieutenant, a captain. Some people have majors after that, and then deputy chief. So maybe the major is the deputy chief in some departments, whatever. It's hard to believe that nowhere along that chain of command, nobody has the wisdom to make that decision that this little girl should not be arrested, or anyone under the age of 12 should not be arrested. As a grandfather myself, I understand how traumatic this incident was for the children and everyone involved. Officer Turner was working as a school resource officer at the Lucius and Emma Nixon Academy, a charter school that serves students from kindergarten through fifth grade, when he arrested the children in September. Right, because this same guy arrested somebody else, another six-year-old. He was fired for that. He had been reassigned to the Reserve Officer Program, which is made up of retired officers. Officer Turner had served on the police force for 23 years and retired in June of 2018. He could not be reached for a comment. A lawyer for the school said the officer arrested the children despite the principal's request that he not do so. At the time, the police department required officers to get a supervisor's approval when arresting anyone under the age of 12. Officer Turner failed to do so. Kaya's grandmother, Marilyn Kirkland, stated that on the day of the arrest, she had received a call informing that Kaya had kicked a staff member at the school and that the girl had been charged with battery and taken to juvenile assessment center. Ms. Kirkland said she tried to explain that her granddaughter is dealing with some disorders. This is what Aramis Ayala, the state attorney who serves Orange County, Florida. I refuse to knowingly play any role in the school-to-prison pipeline at any age, Ms. Ayala said at the time. These very young children are to be protected, nurtured, and disciplined in a manner that does not rely on the criminal justice system to do it. So there were policies in place, and this officer just didn't do it. Crazy. Along the same lines, an Arkansas school resource officer has been suspended after video showing him choking a student. This comes from Reason.com. You see this guy, this big, strong police officer from Camden, Arkansas, choking out a student, picking him up. The officer's name is Jake Perry. He's got his arm around the Cameron Fairfield High School student's neck, choking him out, lifts him off the ground, talking to his in his ear. He's only been an officer for 2 or 3 years. He's just recently been assigned to the as a school resource officer. Obviously, this new officer who's only been there maximum 3 years does not need to be in the schools. Again, this is the training. Again, this is the decision to place this officer in that school situation has to be questioned. We have to question the implicit bias training that officers are getting. Are you used to working with other students? Of course, this officer is white and this kid is black. How are you viewing this kid? Are there any implicit bias issues, explicit bias issues? What is going on here in the minds of these people? And so, again, I'm going to say the same thing as the previous story. What type of empathetic training, sympathetic training, patience training, what type of patience do they possess in and of themselves in order to be in this line of work, to be able to deal with kids, right? It takes a special type of officer to be a school resource officer, just like it takes a special type of officer to be on a dive team, or to be on a SWAT team, to be on the hostage negotiations team. It takes a special type of officer to do these types of jobs, and we have to be able to put round pegs and round holes, and that's what it's going to take. Let's continue. Let's stay out there in the Midwest. This is a story that happened last year, but the lawsuit has just been filed this year. This comes from the New York Times. Officer pointed gun at black college student's head, lawsuit says. Now, we could always read stories like this, but I really want to speak to the heart and minds of any young persons who's listening to this. And if you have children, make sure that you listen to this story. Jalen Butler and his Eastern Illinois University swim teammates were returning from a championship tournament last year in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, when their bus driver pulled off Interstate I-80 near a rest stop in East Moline, Illinois. Shortly after 8 p.m., Mr. Butler, he was then 19, got out of the bus, which was headed to Charleston, Illinois, to snap a selfie in front of the Buckle Up, It's the Law road sign. He was walking back to the bus when several law enforcement vehicles with their lights flashing pulled up, and officers appeared with their guns drawn and pointed at him, according to court records. Mr. Butler, who was the only black student among the more than 30 on the bus, was surprised and confused, but knew what to do, court records said. He instantly stopped, put his hands up, dropped his cell phone that was in his hand, and dropped to his knees. So this kid, 19 years old, had obviously been schooled about how to handle any type of interaction like this. He got the cell phone out of his hand, and he then dropped to his knees and complied and did not resist. The school bus driver and the coaches came over to his defense, said, this kid's with us. They still placed him in the back of the car, ran warrant checks and all that kind of stuff, then took the handcuffs off, and then obviously he was released. This is what some of the court records are showing. At least one officer had his head, had his knee pushed in Mr. Butler's back, and another was pressing down on his neck. Court records show one officer pressed his handguns to Mr. Butler's forehead and warned that if Mr. Butler kept moving, the officer would blow his head off. The bus driver and coach got out of the bus and told officers that Mr. Butler was part of the swim team. They patted him down and then eventually moved the handcuffs. This incident happened almost last year, February 24th, 2019. Mr. Butler is now suing three separate police departments: the Hampton Police Department, East Moline Police Department, and the Rock Island County Sheriff's Department, all three of these departments. So apparently, as the chief is going to go on to say, that they had been searching for a gunman who had shot at a vehicle on Interstate 80, and that was not far from Mr. Butler was. Now, the chief, according to this New York Times article at the time, did not elaborate on the description of the person that they were looking for. So, lo and behold, it seems as if they just stopped this black kid. Now, of course, if the gunman, the original gunman, was a young-looking black kid, black male, then, of course, what they did was completely justified. No problems or issues with that. But he, in the article that I read, did not give a description as to what he looked like. So, but three officers, three separate police departments are looking into this. And so, listen, I really wanted to highlight this story because I want to show that you can't resist this kind of stuff, right? You're outnumbered, outgunned. Get the stuff out of your hand. Do not resist. Get to your knees and present and do whatever commands that they're telling you. And if the incidents that are happening are excessive force, and which Mr. Butler is now alleging, then you will live to tell about it and you will live to sue about it. So if there's anything bright about that particular story, then that would be it. Going back to this idea of school resource officers being empathetic, as school resource officers, another one is in hot water over threatening to shoot a student who was trying to leave campus. Apparently, this kid was trying to leave campus, said he had an orthodontist appointment, and that when he returned, he would have a school note. Now, there's a lot wrong with the story. Yes, the police officer was wrong for threatening to shoot him over someone trying to leave school. Or actually, that wasn't even that. The officer was not going to shoot the kid because he was trying to leave the school. He was going to shoot him if he continued to advance the Ford F-150 truck that he was driving, that this young student who was 17 was driving, and if it came in contact and struck the officer, that's what he was going to shoot him. Again, it takes empathy, sympathy, compassion, patience, and thinking about what's going on. If the kid wants to leave the campus, then write him up, right? We're going to shoot people over this? We got to use our head as a school resource officer. Call his parents. See what the story is, take other measures and methods rather than threatening to shoot people. Now you're going to be placed on leave, and now you're in hot water. This story's made national attention. You got to make better decisions. The school resource officer employed by the Pasco County Sheriff's Office in school and a school discipline assistant, told him he couldn't leave the campus. This happened in Newport Richey, Florida. This actually happened in December 17th, but the video has just surfaced for this incident in February. The boy told the adults that he had an excused absence and returned and would return later in the day with a note. After arguing for several minutes, he tried to pull his gray Ford F-150 around the golf cart to leave. So the officer and the school assistant were in his golf cart. "You're going to get shot. You come another effing foot closer to me," the deputy said. "You run into me, you'll get effing shot." Ugh. School resource officers out there, if you're listening, please use some discretion. Get out of the way. There's no need for it. Write the kid up, suspend them, expel them. There's other methods besides doing this kind of stuff. We can't get caught up in this macho machismo, I'm in charge, you're going to respect my authority kind of thinking. So what has this done? What is this going to do? The school suspended the kid, then the River Ridge High School expelled him permanently. Now, listen, I gotta agree that this kid was wrong on so many different fronts. He should not have scheduled the orthodontist appointment for the middle of the day like that. He should have had a note before, should have been more patient. So there's a lot of culpability and responsibility that has been placed on the parents as well as the child. However, we as school resource officers, we got to come together. Remember, the point and the purpose of this podcast is about bridging that divide, and both sides have to meet each other's halfway. And in this circumstance, the parents and the children have to make better decisions. Right, the 17-year-old kid has to make better decisions. You got to have the orthodontist note prior or make the appointment for later in the day. And the officer in this case has to make better decisions. So there's been a lot of criminal justice reforms, criminal justice debate going on across the country. And one of the biggest parts of that is the bail reformers. I want to read to you just a little bit from The Intercept. The Intercept, this article about The Intercept is about the bail reforms that have taken place in New York City. And just as many people, as many advocacy groups, civil rights activists, progressive groups are trying to enhance more criminal justice reforms. There are many groups who are fighting against that and do not believe in that. So this opinion that many people have, many people are against it. Reform advocates have taken the opportunity to pass a historic raft of criminal justice reforms. Some of the reforms are money bail was eliminated for most, though not all, defendants. A host of minor offenses would now result in a notice to appear in court rather than an arrest. And a long-standing imbalance allowed prosecutors to withhold their evidence against a defendant until the day of trial was right. Passed last spring, these reforms were set to go into effect January 1st. In the meantime, the coalition that helped push through last year's reforms, which are community activists, public defense lawyers, civil libertarians, set their sights on what they want to accomplish in the new year to keep the momentum going. Repeal the law that insulates police conduct from public scrutiny. Reduce the use of solitary confinement and open a legal avenue for people to challenge their wrongful convictions when exculpatory evidence comes to light. Most of all, the reform advocates were eager to make sure that beyond the letter of the law, the underlying spirit of the reforms took hold. But these are under threat, as there's many pushback from many groups who do not want to see these reforms go through. So this is something we really, really have to keep an eye on. This is pushback coming from the city of New York. They don't want them to go through. So check that article out in The Intercept. Really, really interesting article. The name of the article is "The Backlash: Police, Prosecutors, and Republicans Are Looking to Undo a Criminal Justice Reform in New York." For all you political enthusiasts out there, we all know that President Trump has pardoned former Governor Rod Blagojevich. I don't even know how to say this guy's name. Is it Rod or Ron? Rod Blagojevich. It looks like Blagojevich, but I think it's actually pronounced Blagojevich. So he's this guy who was sentenced to 14 years for corruption, trying to sell a Senate seat. And sentenced to 14 years, he served 8, and now President Trump has pardoned him. In addition, President Trump has also pardoned former New York Police Commissioner, which is their chief of police, Bernie Kerik. Carrick served 3 years in federal prison for charges including tax fraud and lying to officials. Good thing he's not in Chicago, right? Lying to people. He was nominated to the Homeland Secretary by President George W. Bush, but he withdrew his nomination, withdrew his name from consideration because of his problems with the law. So he served 3 years in, including all, amongst the numerous people that President Trump has just pardoned concerning these two politicians and former New York police commissioner. If you listen to my episode concerning the school mascots and the use of Native American mascots, you realize that this is a very controversial topic. So I want to thank, and you know exactly who you are, for sending this article to me. You sent this article to me, so I wanted to make sure that I mention it. And apparently the article goes on to state that the state of Illinois is going to crack down or is introducing a bill that would help to eliminate the use of school mascots. Very interesting bill that they're actually proposing. If the schools, here's some of the caveats to the bill that they're introducing. If any school wants to use a school mascot, they would need to receive written permission from a tribe within 500 miles of the school. And that written permission would have to be renewed every 5 years. Conduct a school-wide program on Native American culture at least twice a year. Offer a course on Native American contributions to society. File an annual report with the state on the academic programs they offer about Native Americans. Schools that fail to comply with the ban would be ineligible to participate in any playoffs, according to the text of the bill. So these are some of the measures that the state legislatures are using. So it's good that they are listening, that the legislative body of the state of Illinois and many other states are listening. Despite the fact that many other civilians are not listening, it's good that the legislatures are listening. So thank you for sending me that story. So let me just wrap this up with something that was really long overdue, and that is the fact that the House has finally passed a bill which needs to now go to the Senate and then to the President's office, so it's still a little bit of ways off. Concerning the lynching bill called the Emmett Till bill. This comes from Newsweek magazine. Four lawmakers vote against House bill to make lynching federal hate crime. They cite government overreach. Historic legislation would make lynching a federal hate crime passed by the House by near unanimous consent. Four representatives are withholding. I'm going to read their names. Three Republicans, Ted Yoho of Florida, Louis Gohmert of Texas, and Tom Massey of Kentucky. Justin Amash is the lone independent, although he used to be a Republican. Those are the four who voted against the bill. 16 members of Congress or the House of Representatives refused to vote on this. Republicans accused the legislation of being an overreach by the federal government and encroaching on states' rights. There is that term again, states' rights. The legislation, if enacted, would add lynching to the list of current criminal civil rights violations. Further down in the article in Newsweek.com, it says, previous attempts by Congress since 1900 to pass similar legislation repeatedly failed. The Senate approved a similar measure by unanimous consent in February 2019. But because of minor discrepancies, the Senate will need to vote on the House in order for it to land on the President's desk for approval. If the measure becomes law, violators face substantial fines and or jail times. Between 1877 and 1950, the Equal Justice Initiative estimates that more than 4,000 black people were lynched in dozens of states. Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Virginia. Notice what it says, more than 4,000 black people. Black people were not the only one lynched. A little black history for you. Black people are not the only one lynched. There's been records of course, Native American persons, Italian persons, Jewish persons, all lynched. So these barbaric practices are not isolated to black people. The bill, the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act, was written after the 1955 racist murder of a black teenager in Mississippi, which spawned civil rights action. This legislation will not erase the stain of lynching and racist violence, but it will help shine the light on truth on the injustices of the past so that we can heal our nation and build a better, safer future for all of our children, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said on the floor. So this idea that, you know, we can't get this stuff. They've been trying since 1900 to pass this type of bills. So it's really just inexcusable that this kind of stuff continues to go on and we can't get anything passed. Continuing with that same line, another friend of mine sent me this, so I want to thank you for that. From femoid.com, F-E-M-O-I-D.com. The name of the article is Strange Fruit: When Women Lied and Men Died. History's interjection to the notion that Me Too accusers are incapable of lying or being motivated by malice or financial gain. So this idea, I just mentioned that Emmett Till, the 14-year-old boy in 1955 who was accused of whistling at a white woman. The white woman has since recently recanted and said she was lying about it. Nevertheless, back in, she made these claims. Till was dragged out of his home, beaten, lynched, had a large object tied to him, thrown to the bottom of a river. They did this to a 14-year-old boy for just whistling at a white girl. This idea that women don't lie and, it's just crazy. So let's just tie it into this whole Me Too movement of Harvey Weinstein, Bill Cosby, and all this kind of crazy stuff. You know, we talked about the Gayle King situation, Harvey Weinstein and all this kind of stuff. You know, his recent conviction. People in the Me Too movement, and just because you're a lady, a female, a woman, does not mean that they are incapable of lying. We have to follow the evidence. Of course women lie. And I say that with all due respect to women, to those who are dealing with struggles or issues or dealing with sexual harassment. You know, you should not have to go to work and be sexually harassed. You should not have to sleep your way to the top. This is craziness. I have a daughter, I have a wife, I have a mother, and I don't want any of them or any friends or cousins to have to deal with any kind of brutality or violence or sexual violence or sexual favors in order to get things done. In order to move up the ranks or move the chain of command. So I'm glad that they passed this bill. I'm sure that the Senate will sign it, will sign off on it, and I'm sure that the president will sign it. So that's where we are. So I think that those are the major stories. Of course, Harvey Weinstein was convicted of rape, and particularly one that was in the rape in the third degree at a New York hotel back in 2013. He can get 4 years for that. So I'm curious as to what you all thoughts are on Harvey Weinstein's conviction. We all know about the tragic death of Kobe Bryant. We all know that the Lisa Leslie Gayle King interview. I commented about that before. I think that's on Instagram. So it's just been crazy, crazy, crazy month, crazy last 2 months. And let me just briefly talk about this Gayle King incident one more time. The only reason I'm bringing this up is because Snoop Dogg ended up apologizing, going on the Jada Pinkett show, the Red Table Talk, or whatever that show is called, talking about it, apologizing, talking about how men and women ought to interact and be civil and cordial towards each other, which I completely agree, and completely agree that the way that Snoop Dogg talked about Gayle King was completely wrong, called her out of her name and all that kind of stuff. But I also do believe heavily that Gayle King, Oprah Winfrey ought to give some type of apology for the way that they have gone after and targeted black men, Russell Simmons, Michael Jackson, R. Kelly, Lieutenant Governor of Virginia, Justin Fairfax, who has just about been vindicated. We now know that the woman in that case, in his case, was lying. Read up about that if you're not familiar with that particular case. You know, it was just about the time that the Lieutenant Governor was going to look like he was going to take power away from the current governor because of the blackface scandal that governor had at the time. He had posed in blackface for his medical school yearbook. It now resurfaced fairly recently. Looked like they were going to try to pressure him to step down from his governorship. And this time, Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax, who was a black man, was going to take over. Of course, many people, we can only assume that they did not want him to take power because he's a black man. So a woman came out against him, and another woman came out against him, saying that he had raped them back when they were in college. And then once they pressed her about it, then she refused to answer. She refused to go to the criminal courts to justices and district attorneys in two different states, in Massachusetts and in North Carolina, where the two events allegedly happened. But two separate ladies, and neither one of them wanted to go to the prosecutors there. And because of that, the cases were end up dropped. But the both women did say that they would testify before a political committee, but not a criminal justice committee, right? You don't want him arrested, but you'll testify in order to shame him, in order to embarrass him and make sure that he does not ascend to the governorship of the state of Virginia. Very, very peculiar. So that's what's going on. So Gayle King, Oprah Winfrey go after these men, Justin Fairfax, R. Kelly, Michael Jackson, but they don't go after Harvey Weinstein. They don't go after Charlie Rose, who Gayle King worked with. Don't go after and don't have any documentaries or docuseries about Matt Lauer from NBC News. So it's just been crazy. It's just been crazy. This is why so many people, including myself, are so angry about the situation. Yes, Snoop Dogg was wrong. He should have apologized. But we also needed apologies from these ladies who have an obligation, I think, and I believe, and this is to our detriment, that we think that when people who have a certain understanding of the injustices who have been that have been done against us would not gang up on those injustices. But if you're going to be fair and equitable in your treatment of accusers of rape, then be fair and equitable in your accusers. And they have not done that. And so they deserved to be called out for that. So shame on them for that. So that's it, ladies and gentlemen. That's the monthly wrap up. If you have any stories that you want me to go over for the month of March, make sure you send me those stories, cptlhunter@gmail.com. That's my email. So email me the stories. If you're on my Facebook, or you can text it to me, message it to me, DM me. I'm on Instagram, cptlhunter, Twitter, cptlhunter, Facebook, Captain Hunter's podcast on Facebook. Please support the show, Patreon, Venmo, PayPal, Cash App. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, much love and peace.